Today, I'm talking to my therapist. Yes, my therapist. Yes, that means I go to therapy. I go to counseling. And honestly, it's been one of the best decisions I've made for my walk with Christ, my calling, my ministry, my family, my marriage.
Our children are leaving the faith in droves.
As a result.
Oh, I got a pause here.
We're going live right now.
How can we raise our kids to stand firm, have a faith that lasts, and navigate such a time as this?
Our nation's capital has just been.
To turn a nation, you have to take the next generation.
Today in the news, COVID-19 numbers.
I'm Jake McCandless, and this is my podcast, Stand Firm Parents. We're working together to help our children have a faith that lasts.
And now, here's Jake McCandless.
Today, I'm talking to my therapist. Yes, my therapist. Yes, that means I go to therapy. I go to counseling. And honestly, it's been one of the best decisions I've made for my walk with Christ, my calling, my ministry, my family, my marriage. And we're going to break down some of the real basics of emotional health and why pursuing help isn't weakness, but it's seeking wisdom. I want to introduce you to Coretta Woodard. Along with being my therapist, she is also the founder of the People's Place Counseling Center in Bentonville, Arkansas. Coretta is a licensed professional counselor specializing in marital and premarital parenting and trauma PTSD. Her therapeutic approach is rooted in Christian values. I shared in my introduction that you are my therapist, and so I'm excited to be on this side asking questions this go around. Coretta, thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jake. And yes, I'm excited that you're on that side, and I'm happy to share what I can.
Well, you've made a tremendous impact on my life. I honestly can't imagine life without therapy, which sounds wild for me to say, and probably from who you met at the beginning for me to say that, and to be focusing on mental and emotional health. But I know I was hesitant. I wasn't even 100% certain how a Christian should approach therapy and approach mental, emotional health. Do you find that to be the case with Christians, and why might that be? And how would you encourage Christians to just view therapy and counseling altogether?
If you had asked me this question before the pandemic, I would say absolutely. But the pandemic did something really beautiful in the faith community, and it made therapy be more accessible and more acceptable. However, I will say people at your level of leadership in the faith community still struggle with seeking wise counsel. And I kind of like to use the term wise counsel, especially when I'm referencing the faith community, because there are several places in the Bible where it emphasizes the importance of wise counsel and how when you're seeking it and heeding it, it actually creates safety and success for you. And so I would say yes and no. I would tell you that it's getting better in the faith community to where people are partnering with wise counsel. And so I think that's a good thing.
I didn't realize that. That's what I love about these opportunities is because I have one assumption and I just assumed it's the same. So before COVID, what was the atmosphere regarding Christians and therapy or wise counsel?
I've heard many people say, I pray, I have Christ, I don't need a therapist. And the one thing that I try to always help people understand is God is still your source. Therapy is a resource. And even for me as a therapist, I feel called to being a therapist. I don't feel like it's a job for me, but I do feel like it is a calling, just like being a pastor, just like being a teacher, an apostle, an evangelist. I feel called to therapy. And so when I'm in therapy with anyone, I'm partnering with Holy Spirit and it's ministry.
I can 100% attest to that and that being a calling for you. You mentioned it's harder for people in leadership, Christian leadership, church leadership like myself. And along with being reluctant to come to therapy and counseling, I was a tough shell to open, tough nut to crack. You told me that especially as a pastor, it was hard to be transparent I can't believe I'm letting the world know that I'm going to therapy and talking to you here openly live. But I would say that that's likely true for many Christians, and you alluded to it, especially those heavily involved in church, especially Christian leadership. Does that seem to be the case? And why do you think that may be?
Absolutely. The positions that leaders have almost puts them in a position to be perfect, to not have problems, and to have it all figured out. And when you come to therapy, therapy is only useful and helpful if you're able to be completely transparent and honest and be able to face all of you, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's rare that leadership get that opportunity without being picked apart by their parishioners or onlookers.
Well, yeah, I've been reluctant to even share much about me going. And I'm here in the actual studio of my denomination, of the missions group that's sending me. And so there may be a response to what I say. I can definitely say that. Does it seem to be any biblical like resistance too that people may use to kind of argue against using therapy? Do you run across any of that?
I have never ran across any biblical truth from anyone of why they don't seek therapy. Now, I have heard people say things like, you shouldn't see a secular therapist or secular counsel. And again, that goes back to what I'm saying. Seeking wise counsel is biblical. And so I do agree that you have to identify the right counsel that you're going to seek. And so what that looks like is taking the time to really vet a therapist. And if I can say this, you know, Jake, when you first started seeing me, I'm sure you were seeing if I was going to be the right fit. And if at any point it didn't feel like it aligned with you, I do believe that you would have discontinued therapy. And I think that's the most healthy thing we can do as people of faith, as believers. If it does not align with how we think and how we feel and how we believe, then that's no longer wise counsel.
That is so good. Which that was not on the script to ask what I asked, and for you to go there, and so you're like, oh, he went off script. But that was really one of the things I'm hoping to end with, is because I think it's so important. And you know, I was blessed to have met you prior to searching out a therapist. And and so that comes to this point that I would decide, okay, I'm going to take this step. And it's like, where in the world do I go? And begin praying about it. And it just became, you know, overwhelming, like God had let our paths cross, and to step into that for sure. I hope this is the first of several episodes. One of the things we talked about is you're going to start putting it more on social media and speaking out in that way. And I definitely want to get you and your husband on to talk about marriage. But I wanted to get you in this episode, to really just help us with the basics. Because I'm focusing on parents considering pursuing emotional health. I believe it's probably a neglected area for many believers, and especially Christian parents.
Okay.
I think that the term can be confusing when we talk about emotional health. It's also like trying to differentiate between mental health, or how they're connected, or if they're the same. Can you help us understand between the two and what being emotional healthy is?
And so emotional health is a result of making your mental health a priority. Making our physical health is a priority. Everybody goes to the doctor, get your checkups. And I guess I don't want to say everyone, but when our body needs something, we don't mind going to the doctor. But when our emotions are out of whack, or we're feeling overwhelmed and frustrated and can't really get grounded, we sometimes may deflect. But when you make your mental health a priority, emotional health and regulation comes from that. So it's a product. Emotional health is a product, and emotional regulation is a product of your mental health being a priority.
Wow.
And what it looks like to, and I guess I want to expound a little bit, because sometimes people are like, well, what does it look like to make my mental health a priority?
Yeah.
We're talking about seeking wise counsel. You know, having a good therapist is just one step in making your mental health a priority. But one of the things that I say pretty frequently is having a therapist is one thing. But if you're unwilling to be honest and transparent when you're in therapy to deal with the real you, you're not going to see much transformation and change. And then even when you go to therapy, you're given tools but you still have a choice when you leave that therapist's office to decide to use those tools. And if you choose to stay the same and not use the tools that you learn in therapy, you just had a very expensive conversation. And so it's extremely important to know that, hey, making your mental health as a priority is not just about finding a therapist, but it's being able to yield to that counsel and actually taking heed and applying those skills to your life. As a therapist, I always ask my clients when they bring up things, you know, what tools did you use in response to what happened? Because what I'm wanting to say is, hey, how well are you applying the skills that you're learning from therapy to your life?
I personally know how important that is. And thank you for pointing that out. I want to go to the tools, but your definition, okay. If I have this right, it's when we emotional health is the result of pursuing mental health. Is that, did I pick that up correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if you're emotionally unregulated, it begins with a mental health issue. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the tools. So I remember one of the first times that we'd been through and I finally became transparent. We began to work through some things. And really the main thing I was working on is regulation. And I was completely unregulated. And I messaged you. And I know you can't really speak to this, but I can say it. I messaged you and said, you know, that, you know, where I was, what was going on. And you asked me, did I use my tools? And I got to be honest, I don't know if I've shared this, but my thoughts were, those stupid things will never work. And I'm not using that crazy stuff. And so I'm like, well, I guess I got to try. And I began to use some of those tools, and it did help.
Yes.
So one of the major things, as I mentioned, I needed to develop in life was emotional regulation. What does it mean to regulate one's emotions? And I may not even be saying that correctly, but what does regulation mean?
And so when we talk about emotional regulation, sometimes people may feel like, oh, she's saying I can't have emotions. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Having emotions are a basic human experience to stimuli. When things happen, we're going to respond from our soulish realm or our emotions, right? And so having an emotional response is very healthy. But what we do with those emotions determines how emotionally regulated we are. If I get angry when something happens, it is okay for me to get angry. If I get angry and I lash out at someone because I'm angry, that's where we have dysregulation of our emotions. But if I get angry and I say, hey, you know what? Let me take a step away for a minute. Let me count to 10. You know, let me journal a little bit of what I'm feeling. Let me sit with this anger and see what's really up under it, because we know that anger is a secondary emotion. And a lot of things manifest as anger, but there's usually disappointment under it, frustration, incompetence, shame, guilt. A lot of those emotions hide up under anger. It just presents as anger. So in a nutshell, having emotions is healthy. It's important that we have emotions. But being able to respond effectively and well to our emotions is what emotional regulation is all about. What do you do with those emotions? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's interesting you went there, because my breaking point to begin to be even thinking about, hey, counseling might be okay. Mental health, emotional health might be okay. I was at an emotional intelligence conference that I went to just because it was a free trip to the beach and trip with my wife that we won. We had to sit through a conference, you know, kind of almost like a timeshare type deal to get a free trip. And we're there, and the speaker says, when you get angry, you don't have to lash out, like you said. You don't have to act mad. And it stumped me. I'm like, yeah, you do. Yeah. If you get mad, you need to throw something. If you get mad, you need to, like, speak louder, or whatever, that lash out, whatever that may be. And that was my breaking point. But it seems like dysregulation would impact relationships. Is that typically where you see this come out?
Oh, absolutely. If we did life by ourselves, emotional regulation would be very easy.
Yes.
But the moment that you do life with someone else, whether it's a spouse, a child, a coworker, they kind of rub us in ways to where we can no longer regulate our emotions with ease. And so in the context of relationships, I sometimes tell people we go to therapy for the people in our lives who don't go to therapy. Yeah. And so when you're in relationship with people, they're not going to think, feel, and behave like you. And so because of that, you have to learn how to control you or regulate your own emotions and not allow what they do or how they think, feel, and behave to affect your emotional state.
So I want to come back to this and how that may impact marriage, but you mentioned earlier the phrase grounding when talking about tools, and, yes. And I know that's related to regulation. What is grounding and what do you mean by that?
Now, grounding is more about being present in the here and now. There's a famous book, The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Vanderkolk, and it talks about how our life experiences and what we experience is stored in our body. And so often you go through your day disassociated from the here and now or the presence because a smell, a sound, a taste, a familiar encounter, it almost takes you away from the moment. And sometimes you can be right present with somebody. How many times have you been sitting talking with someone and they ask you, hey, did you hear me? And you may say, oh, no, I didn't hear you. And they're like, what? We're sitting here right together. And so being grounded is more about being present. And it's about being able to look at something, being in a room. If I'm in the room right now, I could say, hey, I see a yellow pillow. I feel the floor up under my feet. I don't really have a taste right now in my mouth. I'm smelling some sweet aroma from a candle. And so being grounded is more about being present in the here and now. And so often we can be ungrounded because we're just go, go, go. Or life has happened to us and we feel triggered or we feel disassociated because of our past experiences.
You mentioned the being present, grounding, and that's something I really had to work on. I remember one of the first tools I had a weekend coming up and just wanted to be really in tune and grounded with family. And so you suggested I have a rubber band on my wrist that I pop and kind of bring me back to reality. And then also mentioned eating something sour. And I went through like four or five boxes of Sour Patch Kids. And then later I let it slip to my wife why I was eating the candy. And she's like, it's like, you've got to go through that much candy to stay grounded with us. But those, and it's crazy to me, it blows me away how little tools like that, just being conscientious and thinking and having wise counsel speak into you, brings transformation. Most of my dysregulation and where it was seen most came out in my marriage. You mentioned already relationships, and I think marriage is probably where we see that the most. It was for me. It's also where I'm seeing the most transformation as I'm beginning to work on mental and emotional health. Could you just I know later down the road, we're going to talk just straight about marriage, but could you tease just how much dealing with mental and emotional health, what it could do for marriages and families?
Oh, it drastically changes our legacy in our families. I use the quote, two kingdoms collide when people get married, because I have my kingdom, my spouse has his kingdom. And we all like it our way. And when we get married, we would love for it to be this beautiful merger, but there's usually a collision because there's so many things we don't count up the cost for, because there's so many things that you don't really think about when you're in love and everything seems rosy and wonderful. You're not thinking about the little things once you live together and all of these things that can really dysregulate you. And so dealing with your own emotional regulation is the first step in owning your stuff in a marriage, right? Being able to say, hey, this is my stuff and I can't blame it and project it on them. I gotta deal with this. And I have to say, hey, I'm feeling disappointed because I thought this was going to be different. And so I can't just be angry and lash out. I have to sit with my disappointment and I have to find the tools to be able to do this and not blame my husband or my wife. And so in a marriage or in a relationship, we also fully recognize that we come into our relationships with our experiences that we may be experienced in our own homes growing up, in other relationships that we've experienced along the way. And it also creates a false perception of what you're going to have in your relationship. So I always like to say, taking ownership of emotional regulation individually for both the husband and the wife creates a brighter legacy for your children, because what we don't heal and deal with, our children will have to heal and deal with it.
I heard a quote this week. It said, instead of giving them blessings, we give them baggage.
Yes.
With that. And this is off script as well here, but I just feel like we've got to address it just maybe in a small way. But okay. A lot of time when we talk about regulation and dysregulation, it goes back to trauma, pain, something from the past, maybe that we haven't dealt with. How would you encourage someone to, how important it is that they actually deal with something like that?
And you hear some people say that time heals. While I agree that time is a healing agent, real hurt and pain don't go away with time. We may forget, but because our body keeps the score, there's going to be something that happens at some point and it's going to open that door and you're going to be forced to deal with it. If you think about as a kid and you've been told, hey, go clean your room, and you stuff everything under the bed or you stuff it in your closet and you close the door and it looks clean until mom or dad comes in and open the closet door or look up under the bed.
Yes.
And that's what trauma or life experiences do to us. We can stuff it under the bed. We can put it in the closet and get by for a moment. But something's going to open that door, or something is going to pull all of that baggage from up under the bed. And it's going to be when you least expect it. And so it's important to face it, find trusted counsel, process through it, and deal with it. And sometimes I'll hear people say, well, I just want to move forward. I don't want to get stuck in that. And I agree. I don't think there's any wise counselor that don't want you to move forward.
Yeah.
The hard part about moving forward with unprocessed trauma is at some point you're going to get yanked back. And so you really want your forward movement to be true gains and not a perception of gains. That way you can face life, period. Because when you get married, that's another person's emotions. You start having children, and when they go through their different life stages, teenage, adulthood, different things, there's so many opportunities for you to get yanked back because of things that's going on either in your children's lives, your spouse's life. And so it's important to just sit with it, process through it, so that at some point you're not yanked back when you least expect it.
Oh, that's so good. Such wise counsel. And parents, I just want to say, even if you think it isn't affecting you or your family, it is. And if you can deal with that, do it for your family. Do it for your kids. It was mentioned to about legacy when we started. I want to end with this. Hopefully we're encouraging parents to pursue emotional health, to get healthier emotionally and mentally. What advice would you have in giving them to pursue a therapist and move in that direction?
I'll say this. I'm a therapist myself, and I think I'm a pretty good parent, and I believe that I'm a pretty good wife, and I'm a pretty good human to do life with. However, I'm being perfected through Christ. I'm not perfect. And so even as a parent for me, I have wounded my children. But what therapy has done for me is it has given me a space of repentance and a space of humility to where I can go back and say, hey, the way that conversation went or how I responded to you, that was really fueled by some frustration I already had, and I'm sorry. You know, can we sit down? Can we talk about it? All of my children are adult children now, but even with my daughter who has her own children now, she will say little things to me like, Mom, you always seem to be okay. How did you do certain things? And my only response to her was, I had to do a lot of work on me. And I stayed in the process while I was raising you all. And you got the result of that. But now what that helps her do as a mom is to say, hey, I want to not disrupt my children's life and do the work within me so that my kids can be kids. You know, because a toddler's going to have a tantrum. That should not ruin your whole day.
Right.
Now, it doesn't mean it's not going to make you frustrated. A teenager that sneaks out the house and you know you haven't raised them that way, it doesn't mean it's not going to make you, it's not going to bring disappointment. But what it means is you're not going to project all of those negative emotions of the fear that you really felt onto that teenager and not be able to be present with them and actually coach them and teach them. So as a parent, to do life well, wise counsel is advised, because we're just practicing. Same as a physician. When you go to a physician, they have a practice. They're just practicing, which is why they carry liability insurance, because they're practicing medicine.
Yeah.
As parents, we have to get more comfortable with saying, I'm a practicing parent.
Oh.
And I'm not going to always get it right. And because of that, I always like to have wise counsel that can help guide me through the trenches of parenting.
That was gold. That was gold. Coretta, thank you for leading by example and being transparent like you've asked me to do many occasions. Yeah. Coretta, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jake. Thank you for having me, and thank you for trusting me on your therapy journey.
Yes, and I will see you 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Stand Firm Parents. Stand Firm Parents is a production of Stand Firm Ministries in partnership with LifeWord Studios, created by Jake McCandless and Brandon Harrington of Dime Collective. Again, thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe, share, and most importantly, stand firm.